This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It's the battle of the state budget. A few weeks ago, the North Carolina Senate approved a spending plan for the state. Now it's the House's turn. The House plan goes to a series of votes today. Republicans have agreed on the amount to spend. The total investment in both the House and the Senate packages, $22.9 billion. But the two chambers are at odds over a number of points, notably how deep to go with taxes and just how much should be allocated toward teacher pay raises. Here to break down the House budget plan and explain how it will affect North Carolinians is WNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Will you run through the main points of the House tax plan and the House budget for us?
Sure. This budget is a $22.9 billion spending plan. That overall spend number is the same as the Senate. They did what's called a pre-conference. They agreed to a spending number, which is going to cut down on weeks or months of negotiations on the back end. Of that 22.9, we think about it compared to the current budget. It represents growth of 2.75%. And within it, they want to do a number of things. They want to raise teacher pay. They would give an average 3.3% raise to teachers. It would incentivize some of the longer-term teachers. They also, the House members have in this budget a 1.6% cost of living adjustment. This is for state retirees, essentially a boost to the state pension, which state retirees have seen only a very marginal increase going back to 2009 post-recession. So those are some of the top-line issues. The state employees would receive most state employees would receive a $1,000 bonus under this proposal. And then there are the tax cuts. And under the House proposal, what they would like to do, they would like to tweak the franchise tax and the machinery mill tax and allow folks to write off a little bit more in mortgage payments. But the big one is a standard deduction. They want to increase the standard deduction. That is the amount, it's the zero tax bracket, the amount that folks, whether they're single, head of house, married, and filing jointly, would not have to pay on taxes. They want to bump that from $17,500 per year up to $18,500, on which people would not have to pay state tax.
All right, so there's the House budget plan. What about the Senate plan? How does it differ from the Senate proposal?
Well, sticking with taxes, that's the biggest difference at this point. The Senate has a proposal that would cut taxes by about $1.1 billion over the next two fiscal years. Those cuts that I just mentioned coming out of the House amount to about $340, $350 million. So we're talking about a difference of $650 million or so. Where the Senate goes a little bit deeper with these tax reductions is with the rates, corporate rates and individual income tax rates. To this point, the House has not had a particularly they haven't had any appetite for dropping those rates again. And that's something that the speaker indicated this morning. Everybody knows it, that they're going to have to talk about it in what's called conference. Once the House passes this budget, they're going to have to find some middle ground on taxes because $650 million is there's a bit of separation there, right?
That's a big chunk. Let's talk about the details of this because it is interesting. And it looks to me like there's two different philosophies in the House and the Senate, not just the $650 million that separates them, but the Senate wants to cut the rate. That means just give the money back. So you're just giving money to corporations and you're giving money to businesses, right? You're cutting the rates. And the theory, of course, for cutting taxes in any case, especially business taxes, is, well, it's going to promote jobs. But, of course, there's no guarantee if you just give people money, they're going to make more jobs. If you look at the House plan, and this is kind of interesting, this exemption for a machinery tax and a franchise tax for businesses, that it seems to me, and I don't know what House leaders are saying about this, is a little more targeted. If you say, well, I'm going to encourage you to put in machines, plant, and equipment, that encourages job production. If I encourage you to start a business here, that might encourage job production. So it does appear to me that the House plan is a little more targeted to actually getting jobs for the tax reduction. Is that what they're saying
Sure.
about this?
Yeah, I think that is a fair read on this. And, you know, as we've when you see surveys and polls and CEOs and business owners are asked why they bring businesses to various parts of the country or why they open up shop here or there, Are taxes part of the equation? Yes, they are. But so are a number of other factors. I mean, we think about how close you are to transportation hubs. We think about, I mean, there's a list of things, 6, 7, 8 different things that CEOs talk about why they come here. So you can find economists on both sides of this issue that will say, you know, lower taxes drive job creation and job growth, and others that say it's part of the equation, but it's not the driving factor. To your question, yes, this it certainly is a little bit more targeted. I haven't heard leadership speak specifically to that in the last day or so, but that is something. And, you know, one of the things we also see in the House we've talked about on the program before is there are more Republicans in the House. There are more members in the House, 120 total, and 74 Republicans, and their wants and needs are a little bit different. So you tend to see a little bit more diversity within House proposals and the House budget because they're trying to cater to and please many of the members within that chamber.
More members to please and also more uncertainty about exactly what their districts are going to look like in a year and a half or so when they have to stand for re-election. And I understand that is part of the politicking and accounts for some of the difference between the House and Senate plans. Am I right?
I think that's part of it. It's absolutely in consideration at this point. When you think about the supermajorities, the veto-proof majorities, which are what enabled the legislature to pass, you know, largely whatever policy they would like. And we've seen there have been challenges in the court. But even with a Democratic governor, when there are veto-proof majorities, the legislature can say, hey, we're going to do this. The governor can say, oh, no, I veto it. But of course, the legislature says, no, we're sticking with this plan. And what these veto-proof majorities, the experts say that in the Senate, it's very strong. There's not much of a risk. And we'll see new maps perhaps in the next 6 months or 12 months. But in the House, there are more vulnerable seats. There are Republicans who represent areas that are in part urban. We think about Wake County and Mecklenburg County. And there's somewhat of a pull to bring these lawmakers back toward the middle because their constituencies are not as conservative as some of the outlying rural areas in the state. And there's also a little bit more narrow of a window for Republicans when we think about this veto-proof majority. Democrats, the magic number for them is 3. And when they think about 2018, and there's a slim chance we have 2017 special elections, probably not. But in 2018, Democrats are going to try to pick up 4 seats in the House. And that, you know, limits the GOP a little bit more because they're going to have to cut deals with Democrats in order to override vetoes from the governor. So, yes, I think as we think about tax policy and some of the provisions that that are in this budget and other elements that are moving through the House, Republican lawmakers are certainly thinking, certain Republican lawmakers in the House are certainly thinking about, you know, what kind of electoral threat or harm could come out of this in a year and a half.
And because of impending court rulings, possibly on House and Senate districts, on legislative districts, are any House members worried about the way their maps might be redrawn owing to what's going on in the courts right now?
Short answer, it's too early to tell. Longer answer is, yeah, some of them are very concerned. And I think that if and when new maps come, and conventional wisdom at this point is we are going to see new maps. A challenge to gerrymandered districts was remanded to the state Supreme Court earlier this week. That's a case that has been before the state Supreme Court before. However, now the state Supreme Court has 4 Democrats. So if and when new maps do come, I think you're going to see some Republicans that get drawn into districts that are dicey, perhaps definitely not as favorable. I wouldn't be surprised. And getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are some Republicans who maybe consider whether or not to run at all, because these are going to be much, for some of them, much harder seats to win.
Let's talk about a few other items in this budget. A debate in the House Appropriations Committee yesterday over whether money should go to a new grant program for charter schools that want to provide low-income students with transportation. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so this actually came from Republican John Hardister, and this is an effort to put forth more money to charter schools that would require a certain population, a certain percentage of the students to be on free or reduced lunch. The idea here would be to diversify to some extent some of the charter schools. I think right now it's about 20% or 30% from the 20% or 30% of all charter schools that that have you know, a significant number of folks with free children with free and reduced lunch. So this would be a funding shift, and it's something that would take money away from excuse me, I believe the Department of Transportation and Road Maintenance. And this is, you know, a new way, another effort to expand charter schools or opportunity scholarships is what Republicans call them. And it's not something we saw in the Senate proposal, a little bit more nuanced. And this is, yes, this is something that generated some divisiveness and a divide yesterday in the appropriations.
It appears to answer at least one of the critiques of the expansion of charter schools, which is that without the insistence on free and reduced lunch and free transportation, you're going to get resegregated schools, you're going to get class divided schools. Those that don't offer it are only going to cater to the wealthy, and that's been the critique of the expansion of charter schools. This appears to go some of the way to actually meeting that critique, although there still wouldn't be a demand that all schools do it, so some could still fashion themselves or position themselves as elite schools.
But it is a slight shift, and again, tethering it to the last question that we were just chatting about, this is a Republican representative, John Hardister, in an urban area. So is this something that has true legs and is going to get through and will be codified into state law? That remains to be seen. But at the very least, this is a Republican who, from an optics standpoint, is getting behind something that perhaps isn't in line with many of the Republicans in that majority, and it's for political reasons.
The Krispy Kremes are making their way into the State House now, suggesting a long night ahead as the House considers this final budget package. Going to be a long night, do you think?
We will see. If they get done before 10 o'clock, the indication is that they're going to go home tonight and come back tomorrow for second reading. But the speaker asked a question earlier before the body and said, if we are here at 10 o'clock, do we want to just stay through midnight and do that third vote on technically a different day? 61 voted up and 45 voted down. So if they're debating long enough on this second reading, we'll be here early Friday morning.
Stay away from the donuts, Jeff.
I will.
Jeff DeBerry, WNC Capital Bureau Chief. Just ahead, a writer and historian, John T. Edge, talks about the changing identity of Southern food. You'll hear about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Do stay tuned.